What's up, everybody? Welcome to Screen Geeks Radio, episode 108. This is Dave.
This is Barry.
This is Chief Warrant Officer Roy Miller, and I'm done following orders.
Wow. Why am I blanking on what that's from?
I love it. He's in character. This is great. Be a very special episode.
Okay.
Wow. And I'm Lieutenant Ellen Ripley.
Wow.
Who are you, Dave?
I have no idea. I'll be coffee. I'll be the crazy one. Why not?
There you go.
Why are we not getting to the abyss on this series?
Why not?
Because it's James Cameron.
Well, I'm sure we'll get to the abyss at some point.
Oh, I'm sure we will too.
Cameron did some good movies.
Yes, and I want to talk about those movies. Yes. Yeah. Just like I want to talk about good Spielberg movies, because I know they're out there somewhere. I'm kidding. Was there.
Well done, Dave. Well done.
I appreciate that. All right, let's talk about what we watched. Ethan, why don't you kick it off?
Yeah, I watched a ton this week. First, I watched David Cronenberg's The Brood.
Oh, wow. Oh, man.
A pretty interesting movie. It actually reminded me a lot of Brian De Palma's The Fury.
Yeah.
In that it's kind of slow throughout, but it kind of, towards the end, it just goes so insane that you just like, ah! So, yeah, it's an interesting movie. No Videodrome, but then again, what is? Next, I watched Jean-Luc Godard's Contempt, which I quite enjoyed, but I have to take a little issue here with Turner Classic Movies. Now, I love Turner Classic Movies. I watch and record tons of movies off them every month, but the print they should have Contempt was first cropped to full screen and dubbed.
Ooh.
Oh, so like, even the Italian stuff was?
That's dreadful.
Yeah, it's like,
why is
Turner Classic Movies doing this? Like, that's so unlike them.
Yeah.
I can see it happening like on American Movie Classics because, you know, they show crap on there, but.
Yeah, Turner, that's amazing.
Like when I pressed play in the movie and it was like, it was clearly cropped, I was just like, I was so furious. I was ready to like just delete the movie. Luckily, I watched the entire thing and I still managed to enjoy it, but it was just like, argh.
Wow, it sounds like they aired like the VHS version from the 80s, which was cropped and dubbed, and man, that's an abomination. That's one of my favorite movies, as you know, man.
It's a gorgeous film, too.
I love that film, yeah. I can't believe they do that. Wow.
Yeah.
That sucks.
Anyway, moving on.
We were all excited that you were watching it.
Yeah,
really?
Like, oh, man. That's like going to Disneyland and just like, you know, going on the monorail and leaving. Not that ever happened to me. I mean, you know.
Mm.
Or going on It's a Small World and leaving.
Ooh.
That's
even like
worse.
Seeing a Twilight movie. That's what that's like.
Oh.
Okay.
What else did you see, Ethan?
I watched the first and only film directed by David Byrne, True Stories.
Oh, I love that movie. Love that film.
Yeah, I enjoyed it, but I had a few issues with it. Like, of course, I'm a big fan of the music, but there were some points I felt it was really kind of just bizarrely placed. Like, there's this scene where early in the movie where their song Wild Wild Life, which is one of their biggest hits, is incorporated, and it's like they're playing at a club, and it's Burns' vocals, and everyone just runs up and like lip syncs to it. And I've seen the music video for that song, and like that music video is like literally the scene in the movie, and it's
right.
Just sort of weird. It's weird too that because David Byrne, he's in the movie, he's playing a character. There's another scene where a woman, a character, the laziest woman in the world, she's watching TV, and the Talking Heads music video is playing, and it just seemed kind of weird to me. But anyway, it's a entertaining movie, and John Goodman is awesome in it.
Yeah, he is. Yeah, and I like Swoozie Curtis too as the world's laziest woman. You know, it's really pretentious. It's such a pretentious movie, and that was a point when MTV, like, instead of actually making, like, spending money to make music video spinoffs, they would literally just, like, play scenes from movies, like in the case of, like, True Stories or anything that Prince, any of Prince's movies, like, no music videos, just scenes from, like, directly from the movie. They did the same thing with The Bodyguard. Like they didn't actually have music videos for The Bodyguard. They just, like, show, like, outtakes of the film. But, no, I love the film, but you definitely got to be a fan for that one.
Yeah. also watched, I rewatched The Squid and the Whale.
Oh, wow.
Which was, yeah, it's a great movie. The first time I saw it, I liked it, but didn't love it. But rewatching it now, it's definitely a 4-star movie. And actually, it's funny, we watched it in my family studies class, and we did an activity afterwards where we had to do, like, recreate it, play the family, and do, like, them going to a group therapy session. I got to play Bernard, the father, played by Jeff Daniels.
Oh,
so that was pretty fun.
That's a tough one for me. Yeah, just coming from a broken home, that's a tough one. One of the most painfully, brutally honest movies about divorce I've ever seen, but I admire the film, but it's a hard one for me to watch. Good film, though.
Yeah, I also watched Todd Solondz's Palindromes.
Oh, man, I've been dying to see that. How is that?
Man, I think after watching this movie, I think Todd Solondz hates America more than Lars von Trier.
Okay.
Like, this movie, I liked it. It's a major step below Welcome to Dollhouse and Happiness, because it's just such an angry movie. It's just so hateful. But again, Todd Solondz, he tackles some pretty interesting and true themes, I feel, in a funny way. And I guess you guys know the kind of the gimmick of the movie.
Yeah.
No.
It's all the... I guess I'll tell you, Dave.
I know.
Basically, it's about this 13-year-old girl who wants to have a baby. And throughout the movie, she's played by different, like, girls. So there's, like, a bunch of different 13-year-old girls playing her. But also at points, basically, Precious plays her.
Jennifer Jason Leigh plays her. Yeah.
Leigh plays her.
It's
It's pretty interesting.
And isn't Ellen Barkin the mom?
Yeah, she's in it. And the movie kind of... A point that people may have tried to say about it is that it's basically about the abortion debate, but honestly, that's only kind of a small facet of the movie, I find. I think its movie is overall just a big kind of slap in the face of America post 9/11, but yeah, I enjoyed it. I'd recommend it.
Okay, I'll check that out. I'm curious.
And last thing, I watched Pink Floyd live at Pompeii.
Oh, nice.
Which is, again, kind of another one of their kind of pretentious concert movies. But again, I love that kind of stuff. So, yeah.
Very cool.
Cool. I guess I'll go next. You know, after our discussion of Remember Me last week, I decided to watch the opening scene of Postal. Just because it seems like it's a great segue, you know.
I thought you were going to say United 93 or World Trade Center.
Oh, no. I just needed to watch that opening scene because I don't need to see Dave Foley's junk. But, you know, it's really sad. My entire life this week has been taken over by between either watching Supernatural, which we're into like halfway into season 3 now. We're going to be caught up by the time Starfest is out. And I've been playing the multiplayer demo for Blur on Xbox 360, and it is crackalicious. Awesome. So, yeah, beyond that, I did actually get around to revisiting Doctor Strangelove. I love that movie.
Nice.
It's so messed up, but gloriously so. I kind of wish I could see the footage of the pie fight.
Mm.
Just for the heck of it, but yeah.
Sure. Yeah,
but it's such a great satire about war and the Cold War. It's just... good stuff.
No fighting in the war room.
Yes.
Yeah. Great film.
Gentlemen, there's no fighting in the war room.
Speaking of pie fights, I read this in this book, Inventory by the AV Club. It's all these pop culture lists, and they had this like list of 20 movies that originally ended with a pie fight. And you know, it was another movie that had an original pie fight ending?
What?
Wings of Desire.
Really?
Yeah. Apparently, the. what's the guy's name?
Vim Vendors.
Vim Vendors. Yeah, he wanted a movie to end with the angel and his love interest having a pie fight. Ended on like a lighthearted note.
Interesting.
Wow. Okay then.
Huh. That could probably.
And sorry.
Work.
Also, speaking of Supernatural, Dave, I've been watching that show, as you know. But something I want to bring up: how do they get away with all that violence on the show?
Oh my gosh! A lot of it is off screen.
No, but there's like tons of gore in it. Like there's so much. It's so bloody.
I don't know, but I'm really thankful that it does.
Yeah, yeah.
because it really is like watching a horror movie every week. It has high production values. And yeah, it's a good show. It's a fun show. Like the second season really starts kicking into more character stuff. And the third season does it even more so. And yeah, it's just such a good show. Oh, yeah. So Barry, what have you watched?
I went and saw Roman Polanski's The Ghost Writer, which I really admired.
Not the Nicolas Cage movie, right. I keep thinking
the Ghost Writer. The Ghost Writer, sorry. I'm not enunciating well. The Ghost Writer with Pierce Brosnan. Amazing cast. Let me just get that out of the way. We got Ewan McGregor in the lead role. Very good, by the way. Pierce Brosnan, who unfortunately, even though he's second billed, it's more of an extended cameo. He plays Tony Blair, essentially. In the supporting cast, you've got Kim Cattrall, Eli Wallach, James Belushi, a bald James Belushi, and by the way, he's never been better. He's amazing in the film. And Olivia Williams, Bruce Willis's wife from The Sixth Sense, who is incredible in this film. I mean, Oscar-worthy performance. Weird cast, but everybody is in top form. It's about a writer who is sent to basically be the second ghost writer on this puff piece autobiography about the former Prime Minister of England who has this really dubious past, and Ewan McGregor is sent to write the book. It's a it's a movie about a writer, but it's really exciting. That's the weird thing. It's like it's actually really exciting, very edge of your seat.
So it's like Secret Window. I'm kidding.
Better than Secret Window, thankfully. Much better. I love the film. I was really surprised how good it was. It doesn't quite sustain the excitement and the tension all the way through. The second half of it is just a little bit loopy, but it has a really good chase scene, and then it ends with, I think, maybe one of the best endings I think I've ever seen. The ending of the movie is stunning. It's poetic. It comes out of nowhere, and you could kind of hear how shell-shocked the audience was. Of course, it was a matinee, and I was like the youngest guy in the audience. There's a bunch of old people, so I'm sure they would have been shell-shocked by anything. But the ending, I don't know. I thought it was, for me, it's one of the most amazing and stunning endings I've ever seen for a movie. The last 15 minutes of the movie just really stacks on the twists. And I love the film.
Cool.
So I saw that. Saw Bad Influence. This is an early thriller from Curtis Hanson. You know, this is back before he did like L.A. Confidential and 8 Mile. This is back when he was doing those you know, really great A, B movies like Hand That Rocks the Cradle and The River Wild. Bad Influence is with James Spader. He plays this nerdy guy who works at a company, basically gets stepped on all the time. He meets, it's very much like Strangers on a Train. He meets Rob Lowe, who's this real bad guy who introduces him to the world of like corruption and lies and crime, and it's really sleazy, and it doesn't have a good ending, unfortunately, but it's really stylish, really well done. I enjoyed it. Saw a cheesy movie on Hulu, one of those waste of time movies on Hulu called Flashback with Kiefer Sutherland and Dennis Hopper. Kiefer Sutherland is it's a stupid buddy cop movie. Kiefer Sutherland's a fed. He has to take this former hippie criminal to jail on a train. It's one of those road trip movies. And Dennis Hopper is hysterical. He plays like a real exaggerated version of his like hippy dippy self. But the film, it doesn't know if it wants to be a comedy or an action movie or a love story or a heartfelt movie, and it's really violent. Yeah, it just doesn't work at all. Went back and looked at, speaking of Curtis Hanson, went back and looked at Wonder Boys with Michael Douglas and Robert Downey Jr. I love Wonder Boys. It's one of my favorite movies about writers. Speaking about great movies about writers, great film. I hope people look at it. It kind of got passed over when it came out. Jules and I looked at Space Cowboys the other night. Didn't hold up as well as I remember. It's such a silly film. It's probably one of Clint Eastwood's laziest movies. Like, there's so many scenes where you get the sense like the, you know, it's James Garner, Donald Sutherland, Eastwood, and Tommy Lee Jones. There's so many lines. You get the feeling like they were just like winging it because it's such a silly piffle of a movie.
Yeah,
but I enjoy it. It's fun.
What was the plot of that movie again? I can't remember.
Satellite from the Cold War that's going to like fall into the atmosphere and like kill hundreds of thousands of people unless we could send 4 geriatrics into space to like save us.
So it's very believable.
So that, yeah, they're being trained to do so and whatnot.
All I remember is that in the ads for it, they played an NSYNC song.
Right.
That was a weird choice.
Right,
really?
It's in the movie too. There's the nice Space Cowboy song by NSYNC. Yeah, like there's a scene, there's like the hero shots, like the 4 of them like coming towards the camera and they space ride, they play and thankfully the song is over as quickly as it begins, but yeah, it is kind of weird.
Man, Clint Eastwood is so good at picking music.
I have a feeling the studio like forced that on him, but oh well. Hey, what the heck, the movie was a hit, it's not a bad film. The Rescuers Down Under, which I've never seen.
Such a fun little movie.
It's really well done. Like the story's not its strength. The strength is the animation, and the animation's really beautiful. It's got some really exhilarating action sequences, and George C. Scott and John Candy give great, great voice performances. Good film. I honestly remember the original, so I really don't remember it well at all.
Yeah.
But I thought this was definitely an improvement. You lent me The House of the Devil, which was interesting.
Yeah.
I had very mixed feelings about it. I loved the first 75 minutes of it. All atmosphere, all just anticipation, all suspense. I love that it was it meant to look and feel like an 80s horror movie, and it does it without winking to the audience. It does it completely straightforward.
Absolutely.
It's a movie that really could have been done just fine as a double feature, like with Death Proof and the Grindhouse round. I just thought the ending was lame. I just thought it was too much like House of a Thousand Corpses. I thought it was trying too hard to pile on the shocks, and for me it was just too familiar. But
I thought it was trying to go for more Rosemary, for more of a Rosemary's Baby type ending.
Yeah, but I thought Rosemary's Baby did it too.
It did. That whole section's like so small in comparison to the rest of the movie. Like you said, the first 75 minutes of the movie's what, like 85 minutes
yeah.
long?
Yeah.
So.
Well, all the same, I mean, I wanted to, for me, like, I thought, man, this is a 4-star movie, the way it was going. I mean, there's so much, like, what's in the house and the hair in the bathtub. Like, there were so many creepy little details that it was in, like, I just thought this is one of the best films of its type, and for me the ending was such a letdown that for me it's a mixed bag, but real promising. I'd love to see what this guy does next.
Yeah.
Not too much left. Jules,
I forgot something I had to bring up too.
So, okay, yeah. Very good. Jules and I went and looked at The Room again. This is Jules' third time seeing The Room. We're big fans of this film.
So I need to see this movie.
Definitely.
Okay.
It's when you see it, we'll have a long discussion about it. But it is one of the funniest films ever made, and completely unintentionally, which is one of the reasons.
Like so more good. So than Troll 2? That's really my question.
I think it's funnier than Troll 2.
Yeah, wow. It's a honestly. Movie that's like on every single conceivable level is incompetent.
Yes, yes, yeah. Because Troll 2, at least, it does have that creep factor going for it. But no, I think The Room is much much funnier. Because it's much worse.
All right.
Marty had me watch Bobcat Goldthwait's third movie, World's Greatest Dad, with Robin Williams. I don't think it's a great movie, but I did like it. It's definitely very bold. It's very brave. It has two amazing scenes that kind of really bring back Robin Williams to his street cred. He's got a scene dealing with the death of his son that has no dialogue, and it's one of the most devastating scenes I've ever seen in a movie. And then the ending of the film, set to Queen and David Bowie's Under Pressure, is one of the great sequences I've ever seen, really. And I don't even want to describe and give it away. But it's not a great movie, but it's got great sequences, and I really liked it. And then finally...
Bulldogs?
No. Jules and I suffered through a movie last night. I think it really is one of the worst movies ever made. It's a film written and directed by Robert Downey Sr. Robert Downey. Robert Downey was a well-known independent underground filmmaker in the 70s. He did a bunch of films that have street cred and whatnot. He did a film in 1997 called Hugo Pool. The cast is Alyssa Milano, Malcolm McDowell, Robert Downey Jr., Sean Penn, and Patrick Dempsey, as well as Kathy Moriarty. Amazing cast. Alyssa Milano plays a pool cleaner, and the movie is about her adventures and her day-to-day experiences. Malcolm McDowell and Sean Penn are two wacky pool guys who go on a mission to get water into this water truck. And then you've got Patrick Dempsey playing, he has Lou Gehrig's disease, so he's in a wheelchair the whole movie. He has no dialogue but a robotic Stephen Hawking voice. And then Robert Downey Jr., giving by far the worst performance of his entire career, plays this prima donna actor, and he has this accent that I can't even begin to describe. And he this was obviously during his drug period, and it looks like it was literally during his drug period that the film was made. The movie feels like a bad dream, and I think that's both intentional and unintentional. It's one of these movies, like, I hate to make it sound interesting because I know people are like, oh, I gotta see that. No, this is one of the most painful experiences I've ever had watching a movie. I only finished it because I said, you know, Jules, I have to watch it. I have to finish it because this is one of these movies where, like, a UFO could come down and, like, land on Patrick Dempsey's head and it wouldn't be out of place. The movie was so random but so insipid, so bad. One of the running gags of this movie is that Alyssa Milano likes Patrick Dempsey's character. She's attracted to him. So she puts him in his wheelchair in the back of her truck and drives around with him. So he's got Lou Gehrig's disease, and she's just casually driving around with him in the back. You know, he's got his robot voice and his head is tilted to the side. And I'm watching this with Jules, and I go, you know, this would be terribly offensive if it weren't so idiotic, and it's completely in line with the rest of the movie. So honestly, I mean, I think Hugo Pool has to be one of the worst films ever made that I think I've ever seen in my entire life. It's up there with, like, even Cowgirls Get the Blues or Mass and Anonymous. It's one of these all-star movies. You get the sense that everybody got called in for favors, but they should have said no.
Okay.
So I had a special mention of Hugo Pool.
You got to see Old Dogs.
I will see Old Dogs. If I could sit through Hugo Poole, I could sit through anything.
Fair enough.
That's it for me.
The last thing that I forgot to mention is I started watching the BBC series Being Human.
How is that?
It is. We've only watched the first episode. It is a heavy show. It is not a fun show. It is, but it's not. I mean, it's a dark show. Like, we can only, you know, Supernatural, we'll crank out 3 episodes at a time, no problem, because it's just so much fun. One, we watched the pilot episode, and it's great. It's for those who don't know what it is, it's a show about 3 people living in an apartment together, except one's a werewolf, one's a vampire, and one's a ghost. And it sounds like a hilarious premise. It plays dead serious so far.
Interesting.
And very good. Like, the vampire's, you know, on the wagon, so he's trying not to, you know, to feed and whatever. The vampire, I mean, there are jokes in it. You know, he turns into a vampire that one night a month when you have the full moon, and they call it his time of the month. You know, there's little gags like that, but it's extremely powerful. It's extremely well made. Like, the production values are really good. I'm looking forward to watching more of it. It's called Being Human.
Jules, did you want to chime in about Hugo Poole? I took all your mic time. Did you want to say something about it?
No, it's terrible.
Okay. I just want to make sure. If there's anything you want to get off your chest about that film.
Yeah, I think you've crapped on it enough.
I would rather watch The Room 10 times in a row than ever sit through that movie again.
I would rather watch The Room 10 times in a row than most other movies. So.
Yeah, I think I would agree with that, too. For me, The Room is not a chore. I love The Room.
Okay. Is it on DVD?
On Tommy Wiseau's site,
but like, it's on that. Oh, you have it?
Marty bought me a copy.
Oh, I absolutely want to watch that.
Yeah,
Oh my gosh, yes, I can't wait to see that.
Yeah, it's good.
Okay, well, let's go ahead and talk about what came out in theaters this week, since we're 20 minutes in.
Okay, let's see, in theaters this week. Where's my list?
Oh, wait a minute. Okay, I'm ready.
Sorry.
I said I was going to be ready.
Oh, wait, I got it. Here we go. Sorry. My handwriting's just terrible. Paul Greengrass's Green Zone, starring
Matt Damon.
That's right.
Yay.
Very good, man. You're on top of that. as I pointed out to Julie, I mean, do you think maybe it was accidental or not that a movie called Green Zone was released like right before St. Patrick's Day? What do you think?
They might have just looked. Sure, why not?
Why not? It didn't do very well. It did $13 million, which is
Better than another movie.
That's true. The other movie being Remember Me, Robert Pattinson's Ode to 9/11. Not really. That movie made about $8 million.
Because you can't call it Never Forget. That just would be going too far.
That's right. But yeah, that film, if it weren't for the Twilight trailer, I have a feeling it really wouldn't have done as well as it did. So, also saying goodbye after 1 weekend in theater, She's Out of My League. Gone. And then another movie that is going to be gone in like 2 weeks completely. In fact, I wouldn't be surprised if it's on DVD next month. Our Family Wedding with Carlos Mencia and America Ferrera.
Because it has Carlos Mencia. That's why it's going to, yeah.
It was doomed from the start.
Sorry.
Movie was doomed from the start.
Yes.
That's it for movies this week.
And you saw Green Zone though, right, Ethan?
I did.
How is it?
I enjoyed it a lot. I think kind of it's an attempt to kind of blend Greengrass's two best movies, The Bourne Ultimatum and United 93, and I think it successfully does that. It's kind of, though, if you're going in, I'd say expect more of a thriller than a real political film, because I think people have a problem people have had with it. I think it doesn't really say anything new about the Iraq conflict, but I don't think it's as much trying to say something as it is kind of just a recreation of an event and such. And it becomes, I've heard people say it gets a little ridiculous, particularly with Chief Warrant Officer Roy Miller and him being done following orders. But see what I did there at the beginning? I
was, brought it back. Well done, sir.
Yeah, full circle. Yeah,
saying tagline. And yeah, but still, I think, again, as a thriller, it works. And again, people who complained about the shaky cam are ridiculous. Like, I just started wearing contact lenses. And I was afraid my eyes were just going to be like, when watching it yesterday, but I had no problem at all. And my eyes were extra irritable. But I really enjoyed it. Not quite as good as like United 93 or Bourne Ultimatum, but again, I recommend it.
Okay. Now, Ethan, I got to ask this, because like the day I got contact lenses was one of the happiest days of my life, because it meant the nerd factor, like for me, went down to like 80,000 points and I actually looked like a real person. Are you enjoying contact lenses as much as I did when I first got them?
Someone asked me, did you lose weight?
Wow. Do they need contact lenses?
I guess. But yeah, they're okay, I guess. I'm just getting used to them.
Cool. Do you have
taking
hard
them
or
out
soft
is
lenses?
A real chore, I find.
Yes, it is. It's a total sanitation process. It makes you feel like you have like you know.
I just got shot in the eye with a laser instead. Forget the contacts.
Oh, that's right. I forgot you did that.
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah. You don't recommend that, do you?
What, LASIK?
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Really?
I love it.
I mean, doesn't it take a while for you to, like, aren't you, like, bandaged and stuff for a while to...
It's like for the first week, and that's just while you sleep.
Week?
Well, here's the thing, while you sleep.
Oh.
Yeah, just to make sure you don't rub your eye
like,
and jack up.
Tom Cruise in Minority Report.
Yeah. That's what I was envisioning. Like, a week, really?
No, like, the next morning, I took the stuff off, and my parents live on the seventh hole of a golf course.
Yeah.
And I looked out, and I could see further than I'd ever had, like, almost even with glasses. I was like, oh, this is beautiful.
Wow.
So, yeah, I don't miss not having glasses. It's, yeah. Yeah. And I just, the idea of sticking my finger in my eye, just, it sounds stupid to me. So then I got it.
It's not as bad as you think.
Well, and I got the surgery for $200 because it was my health insurance actually covered it at the time.
Wow.
That's amazing.
Jeez.
Yeah. Yeah.
Maybe this is TMI, but my mom's ex-boyfriend bought her for Christmas a LASIK surgery, and she had to turn it down because it was like, we broke up. You don't have to buy me this. And it was kind of super awkward.
Wow.
TMI.
No, TMI would be if he, never mind. I'm just going to, when you said TMI, I thought we were going a very bad place. So
let's move on to news.
Yes. Or DVD releases. Even.
DVDs. Yes. Let's see.
Anything but where that conversation was going.
Well, let's see. On DVD, Tuesday, March 16th, the day before St. Patrick's Day, you've got the aforementioned Twilight Saga New Moon. I look forward when we're not going to be talking about that one anymore. Disney's The Princess and the Frog. Dave and I saw this one together.
Yeah.
Good movie. Fun. Not bad.
Yeah. It's Randy Newman.
Oh, come on. Nice. It's one of his better scores, though. Mm-hmm. It's not obnoxious.
No, not at all.
It's not like Toy Story 2. My gosh. Ninja Assassin, which opened up on Thanksgiving, and I think like by Christmas it was actually in the Dollar Theater over here. I never saw Ninja Assassin. That's the one movie Shay's always like, brah, how's Ninja Assassin? Is that a good movie? I don't know. I haven't seen it.
That was kind of racist, but whatever.
No, that's totally Shay.
That's Shay. That's Pidgin English.
Okay.
Do you not remember the episode when he was on?
Yeah. Ethan, it's true. He calls us every day, so.
Okay, I'll just let you off on that one.
Oh, boy.
Just go back and listen to the Lady in the Water episode. And
there you go.
Yes.
There it is. Both creepy and corny, Mila Jovovich and The Fourth Kind.
Okay.
I don't know how that's going to do on DVD. South Park, season 13. Armored, starring a lot of actors who should have known better, like Matt Dillon and Lawrence Fishburne. Did you hear about the Morgans? No. Breaking Bad, the complete second season, and Monk, season 8, as well as Astro Boy and the Vengeance trilogy.
Yippee!
So,
yeah.
There you go.
I think we don't need to really talk about any of those. So. Yeah. Okay. Do we want to do a little Oscar recap at all, really?
Sure.
Was anyone surprised by anything that happened? I guess that's the main question.
I was hoping...
I didn't think Precious would win adapted screenplay.
Yeah, that was a surprise.
Do you want to know how much I didn't think that was going to happen? As I looked, we were filling out our ballot like a half hour before it started. I kept looking at adapted screenplay and mentally like blocking out the fact that it was even nominated. I'm like, there's no way. No. Okay, so what else am I going
to
pick?
Yeah. I was hoping I was wrong about Sandra Bullock, but I was sad to see I was right that she did win.
To be fair, she gave an awesome acceptance speech.
She gave a very good acceptance speech. She did.
Well, the best part was, as my friend Miguel so eloquently put, B-boys for Mr. Fox.
Okay.
Man. You know those guys break dancing to
Oh yeah, that's right.
All the pop and lock into all the scores. Wow, that was silly.
Yeah.
Just silly.
Yes.
And Lauren Bacall got passed over for like, you know, the kind of like the long, you know, standing ovation tribute that she deserved, and you know, she really deserved something bigger than that. So did Roger Corman. Yeah. So we get that stupid tribute to horror movies that felt so random and
with Twilight in it.
I know. It felt like an advertisement for like the Horror Channel or something. It didn't fit.
Freaking Twilight. What the?
Well, what I thought was interesting is they're showing all these horror movies. They're not even showing a clip of Near Dark, which was directed by the
Catherine Bigelow. Very good point.
Is that a good movie?
I like
it's an awesome movie.
It's very good.
I keep seeing it at Walmart for like $8 on Blu-ray. I'm like, huh.
Oh, that's a good deal.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'd do it. Yeah, let's see. I was pissed off that Parnassus got nothing.
Oh, my
gosh. It deserved art direction. It so deserved it.
Yeah, and I think we all figured this out when the lady was accepting for the young Victoria. We're like, you can feel the entire room of the Academy is like, can we re-vote on that one right now?
Yeah, I feel bad too, because that was the one award for that movie I was so pushing for, and then it got it, and I'm like, oh.
Yeah, I really already got two of these. I really don't care.
I really wish it did go to Parnassus. Yeah, that was terrible.
Yeah.
Best picture, I think Hurt Locker deserves it. I love Hurt Locker.
I was okay with it.
I know you're like Bastards better.
Yeah, but I knew it wasn't going to happen. And, you know, it is a good movie. It's a powerful movie, and it's a timely movie. So I can see why it won.
I'm glad Christoph Waltz got it.
Yeah, that would have been a crime against humanity.
Well, yeah, but,
my
know.
Friend also called Monique an arrogant hoe, and I didn't quite agree with that. What did you guys think about that?
I didn't think her Monique? Acceptance speech made a whole lot of sense.
I think she was... I'm assuming she missed the 2001 Oscars when Halle Berry did thank all the black actresses before her that won the Oscar. I think it was kind of odd that she felt the need to thank Hattie McDaniel. I mean, you know.
It's already been done, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't know.
But yeah, likewise, I don't know. I was kind of hoping she wouldn't get it. I was kind of hoping the Precious Love Fest was over, and it wasn't. It just continues.
White Ribbon didn't win foreign language film because I wanted Michael Haneke to go on stage and wag his finger at everyone.
I was hoping that he would win, or even for cinematography, I was really hoping that movie would get something.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was an okay year for Oscars.
I'm glad Star Trek is an Academy Award winner.
Yeah, the franchise finally has an Oscar.
That. Yeah, can you believe that? It's amazing.
We're 11 movies in. We finally got an Oscar.
If they were going to give it anything, I'm glad at least they gave it, you know, yeah. Something.
Well, I mean, what were your other choices? You know, the other choices were, hey, let's call the Mary Kay girl. I mean, really, there was...
Right, yeah. Young Victoria had nothing. And what was the other one?
El
Divo?
Yes.
Yeah, what the heck is that?
Don't know. Yeah. I hope next year's better. Yeah.
Yeah, sincerely. Yeah, truly. I mean... Do you think Tron will be up for Best Picture next year?
I could see it being up for Best Visual Effects.
Well, yeah, I think that's a given. Visual effects and, you know,
man,
sound effects.
That's a nice segue. Shall we segue into the Tron
Let's
trailer?
Let's talk about Tron Legacy.
Since
yeah.
you all have seen it finally. And,
yay!
Oh. Ethan, what's your take on it? Let's start off there.
Man, Michael Sheen looked like David Bowie.
He totally did.
That's Michael Sheen yes. rocking out?
Yes.
I didn't know that. How cool. I had yeah. no idea that was him. I know what you're talking about, though. I've seen that trailer like 10 times now.
I like the fact there's actual story exposition in the trailer.
Yes.
As opposed to just being a whole bunch of, you know, whiz-bang pretties.
Right.
I don't know.
No, I agree with you. No, like I talked to you before, it's like this looks like it has heart. It looks like it's going to be really exciting, but it's actually going to take itself seriously and not be jokey.
Do we want to talk possible spoilers of the story?
No, because okay. I don't even know.
Oh, okay. Then I won't.
No, I don't want to know. I have to wait till December.
No, just looking at the trailer and doing simple math, there's some interesting possibilities of what could happen in the film. But we won't talk about that. That's okay.
All right.
That's okay.
No, I'm so excited to see this thing. Yeah.
Computer World, the new recognizer look. I still love it.
Everything looks great. It just looks beautiful. The music is beautiful. It looks like a freaking cool movie. The only thing that scares me is I remember like a year or so ago and saying, you know, Watchmen looks like it's going to be the greatest movie ever. That Watchmen trailer, man, that movie is going to be up for Best Picture. I just know it. And then it wasn't.
And then we thought that about The Fountain.
Dude.
Well, Dave loves The Fountain.
Dude.
Remember, Dave says that was the best film of the next 3 years.
Yes, so. Exactly. Yes.
So... Well, so I'm sorry Melissa's not here to get behind you on that one, Dave. I apologize. That's not fair. We're totally ganging up on you here.
I like The Fountain.
Good man. It's not without faults, but yeah.
Something I brought up before, but kind of I think Tron, to at least my generation, is kind of no one really has ever seen or heard of it. But I think this trailer, even if you've never seen or heard of Tron, if you see this trailer, you'll be like, oh, man, I gotta see that, so...
And that's probably the best thing that you can say about... That's what a trailer should do. I mean, because seriously, the movie's 25 years old. I've got the 20th anniversary edition DVD. And so, I mean, you do have a generation plus that's never even heard of this stupid thing.
Right.
And I got people who are going to go look at it. And I think they're probably going to be underwhelmed because the story is lacking. But I still love the movie.
But I think people will seek it out because they want to know the connective thread between the movies. And I'm waiting to buy the Tron Special Edition so that I can get like the movie money to buy Tron Legacy. I'm gonna be one of those guys.
You know, I'm sure the Blu-ray will be coming out and there'll be movie money for sure.
Oh, that's going to be
like,
beautiful.
Like 2 weeks beforehand, before it comes out, or like the week of, like the Tuesday before it comes out, they'll release the Blu-ray. And
absolutely. That's going to be a beautiful look at.
What? Oh, movie money is when you get a coupon to go see a movie.
Yeah, like how I saw, like the only reason I went and saw Alice in Wonderland the weekend it opened, yeah.
Exactly. Yep. Yeah, you know, Billy Flynn over at Geek Radio Daily actually was flipping by on HDNet. They were showing Tron, and he said it looks gorgeous in high def.
It's a cool movie, dated or not. It's cool.
Yes, absolutely. All right, who wants to kick off news from there?
Wall Street's Money Never Sleeps has been pushed back to September.
It's supposed to be converted to 3D, right?
We can only hope.
Oh, man. I can't even tell you how annoyed I am by this. I actually, Jules and I watched the original Wall Street a couple weeks ago. I still love the movie. Julia totally dug it. There's even the line in the movie where Charlie Sheen picks up the phone and Gordon Gekko's on the other line. He's like, hey, buddy, money never sleeps. Like, oh, there it is. There's the line. Pushed back to September. The assumption is that Stone needs time to edit. And we know this is the case. I mean, W, of all things, did not feel like a finished movie. It felt like a work in progress, for better or for worse. But, you know, the worst case scenario is that it's being pushed back to September because of its quality, which I hope is not the case. Yeah. So I'm really annoyed by this.
I don't know that I've actually seen the first one yet.
Oh, I see it, Dave.
You gotta see it.
It's good.
Okay.
It's good.
Okay. All right. Have you got anything
else? Tron, you can see this one. Different movie, though. What else do I got? Splice, the film that has caused a sensation wherever it's been showed. It stars Adrian Brody and Sarah Pauli. It's a science fiction horror film. It's said to be quite outrageous and go in directions you would not expect. The site is up, and they've got they've got about a five-minute clip of it, which is really intriguing and shows the quality of the special effects, which are excellent, which I won't describe. But, yeah, it went from being just this movie that possibly was going to go straight to DVD. It's now opening in June. It's now a big summer release. Joel Silver's Dark Horse Pictures has picked it up, and now it's going to play with the big boys, and apparently it's that good. Apparently Joel Silver thinks it's going to be another Paranormal Activity.
Wow.
So, we'll see.
Have you got anything else, or is that it for you?
Last one, Corey Haim passed away.
I never got into the Corey craze at all, really.
I don't know if I was in, you know, I don't know.
I mean,
great,
that was more for,
Corey,
you know,
craze.
Yeah, it was more for the teenage girls.
Right,
with the,
right.
With the 900 numbers for the Corey hotlines.
Right, right. You want to talk to the two Coreys? Hey, this is Corey Haim. Hey, this is Corey Feldman. How are you doing? Yeah, what the heck do you do when you listen to those? Anyway, I've obviously never called them. Corey Haim, I always admired because he did a film called Lucas. Do you remember that
yes.
one?
Yes.
Lucas with Charlie Sheen and Carrie something from the Goonies. Anyway. Lucas is the one movie whenever someone asks, like what movie kind of reflects your life growing up? Not really reflects my life, but reflects who I was as a kid. I always say, look at Corey Haim and Lucas. That's who I was as a boy. I mean, I totally, like, that's me. The awkwardness, the huge glasses, the too smart for the room, but not cool enough to be in the room. That was me as a kid. His performance in that film is moving, and it's honest, and it's terrific. I loved his performance in The Lost Boys, License to Drive, not so much Dream a Little Dream and all its many sequels. He was very good. He was very good, and he never got a chance to really be great. And no, it's a real loss. Real loss. Our thoughts and prayers go out to his family and friends. This is just a real shame.
He kind of went off the rails for a while, and it sounded like he was like starting to kind of make a comeback and
it really
get
did.
It together. And
yeah,
then
it really sounded like he was
in Crank High Voltage.
Really? So. Was it him or Corey Feldman?
It was him.
It was Corey Haim. Okay, I didn't know he was in Crank 2. Man, Corey Haim and Lloyd Kaufman in Crank 2.
There you go. Wow, all right. I guess I'll go next. What have I got? Crud, I'm trying to remember what I've got. Oh, James Cameron. We were talking about James Cameron a little bit earlier, and he'd had a whole discussion about a 3D release of Avatar for home theater. That's a whole other discussion. I think 3D on home entertainment, unless you have like a 100-inch screen, is completely useless. But no one cares about that. The news that came out of this interview, that's huge. No, it's not the fact that we're going to get freaking Titanic in 3D. It's the fact that he wants to actually put out, he actually wants to oversee new releases of True Lies and The Abyss on Blu-ray, which is actually kind of cool. I'd love to see an actual anamorphic true release of The Abyss.
That'd be cool. That'd be cool.
Yes, that's
the. I thought you were going with the other story though. The one I read in Variety was that, I mean, it was in conjunction with the Titanic thing, that in 2012 Titanic 3D. But then this summer, apparently, he's releasing Avatar with a few minutes of extra.
They're talking
footage.
About it. Yeah, Yeah, apparently
releasing, it's like going to still be in theaters by then.
Yeah. Well, isn't it coming out on DVD and Blu-ray pretty soon though?
Theoretically in November, but it sounds like everything that I've been reading is it's a bare bones release. There's like nothing on it.
Okay, so if it's November, then he really could get away with, as you're saying, Ethan, exactly, quote unquote, a re-release of it in summertime.
The director's cut, quote unquote.
Right, but I don't know if you read this, but what I was reading was that they can't do, like, apparently this 40 minutes of footage you took out, they can only reinstate about 10 minutes because of the size of an IMAX movie.
Well, there's that. Well, that's why the original theatrical cut happened that way. The reason people are skeptical as to how much they can put back in is because while it was all filmed, almost none of it was rendered. With the CG and the investment in it. Granted, it's made, you know, over $1 billion or whatever. I think Fox could spend the money. Just saying.
I think they're trying to, like, I think Cameron is trying to ultimately, like, hold on to his King of the World title, because if he, you know, it's currently, like, what, $730 million? Yeah. If it becomes, like, a summer movie, maybe it could make $1 billion.
Well, it's made over $1 billion internationally.
Internationally, but imagine
it's
if he does that domestically.
Internationally.
Oh, that's just $2 billion.
Can you imagine that? Because, like, I mean, on one hand, like, with inflation, it can't quite compete with Titanic right now. But if it makes $1 billion, then yes, it certainly will.
You know, if he puts light cycles in, I'll go.
Like, I love James Cameron and everything, but I don't know. I'm starting to see him as, like, this kind of imperialist king sitting on his throne eating a big, like, drumstick and saying, "More money!" So...
Yeah, he's kind of like Peter Cushing in the first Star Wars movie. He really is that kind of like...
Okay. Wow, and you guys said that? I didn't. I just want to point that out.
I love him as a filmmaker, as a greedy dude. I don't know.
Oh, he's a... Yeah. All you have to do is watch the special features on The Abyss, and there's no bones about it. He's a jerk.
Well, these people don't like him.
Actually, Hunter Stevenson from Slash Film has a suggestion that Cameron should take his Avatar money and find a new religion. And like they can on a, like, a foreign planet, they can hold the premiere of Battle Angel Alita. That I think that's a good idea.
There you go. Wow.
Strangely, a lot of logic to that, but yeah.
Yeah, let's go the L. Ron Hubbard route, and yeah. All right, and my other piece of news that I have this week is, it's not news because it's over a year old, but I came across the footage of the U.S. version of Space, the pilot. There was some footage that one of the actors put up. And I feel so bad for this actor, because if you read the comments, people are just tearing it apart because it's vastly inferior to Space, the TV show. I don't think it had anything to do with the actors. It was the fact that it was a crappy script and crappy directing.
Well, what's weird is it looks like exactly the same as Space, the show, but it's just so kind of awkwardly delivered.
Oh, yeah. Like, you've got Will Sasso in Nick Frost's part. And yeah, it's just very... It's bad.
I can't even imagine that. I don't want to see this footage. I just don't want to see it anymore. Do I need to see this stuff?
What do you think, Ethan? Do you think people need to see this just to know the bullet that we dodged?
I guess, but to be fair, it's like the first episode of The U.S. Office was basically just, wasn't just like a remake of
it was,
the,
yeah.
It was, but it was actually done well.
No, I think most of the general opinion is that it was horrible.
Compared to this, it was done well.
Yeah, well, but so who knows? But still, yeah, it was just weird to watch. Like, I couldn't watch the entire thing. It was just kind of like,
yeah, I roughed it through it, and I will never watch it again because it's just that bad. You probably don't need to watch it, but it's interesting. It's an interesting look into what could have been, and I'm very thankful that it didn't. Hmm. So, Ethan, what have you got for news?
Trailer for Twilight Saga Eclipse.
This looks so the scene in the field of flowers reminded me of episode 2 when they were rolling in the field of flowers. Like, I mean, that's what it reminded me of.
I love you bringing it down to that level.
To be fair, I don't know. Maybe we've picked on, like, Twilight. We've just torn Twilight apart so much. It's almost like kind of picking on the retarded kid at school. So... I think I'm just gonna start liking it to be contrarian and cool. So yeah, this trailer was awesome.
It is kind of like beating a dead horse for sure, because, you know, the horse, actually, it's not beating a dead horse, it's beating the decomposed corpse of the dead horse.
There's just nothing new, because I mean, I've seen the two Twilight films, and this looks just like what we've seen before. It doesn't look like they're going in any new directions.
Did you hear the story? David Slade directed it, the guy did Hard Candy and 30 Days of Night. Apparently he got kicked out of the editing room.
Did he?
Oh, man.
Yeah, because I think I've heard he wanted to make it like a horror movie, but they're like, no. So.
Well, I remember when he picked on it like mercilessly, and then suddenly he got tapped to direct it, and all that stuff magically disappeared from the internet.
Yeah, oh, man. It's a conspiracy.
This doesn't look.
I'm curious if Bryce Dallas Howard's character can actually be scary. She's the redhead we see very briefly, who's like.
You mean Julia Roberts? She's got the Julia Roberts crimped hair from the 80s.
I know. I don't know. Maybe some tension will help. The studio apparently thinks they could compete in the summertime, which I think is suicide. I think that's a bad. This is like when they moved Harry Potter to the summer. It's like, no, Harry Potter was always a November thing. Like, this is always going to be like a Christmas event thing. I can't see this competing like with Iron Man 2 for 1 week. Yes,
the Twilighters. They're a crazy breed, man. Hell and high water. They will come.
Like they did for Remember Me, that whole whopping $8 million it got.
Well, that's different because he's not a sparkly vampire, but it's fair like enough. It's like if they held the premiere of if like they said the Twilight Saga Eclipse is playing in only one theater, and this theater is in on the planet Mercury, they would find a way.
They build a very long ladder.
Ladder to heaven.
I don't know what that really is saying about the. Never mind. Okay, I'm just gonna leave it alone. Yeah.
What else we got?
Yeah, what else you got? Because that's just such a buzzkill.
Last story here. The film All Good Things, starring Ryan Gosling and Kirsten Dunst, was originally supposed to come out in July of last year, but being released by the Weinsteins, of course, they sat on it and haven't planned to do anything with it since. So the director of the movie came to the rescue and bought his film back from the Weinsteins and is now shopping it to other distributors.
Good for
him. I just
him.
Thought this was kind of a cool story.
That's a very cool story. The Weinsteins have held many a movie a hostage. They've done that for so many films. Even movies like Lasse Hallström's An Unfinished Life, they did it to that film. The list goes on and on. They have a reputation for doing this. In fact, the rumor is that they have a lot of movies in the Miramax vault that have still never been released that they bought at film festivals like back in the mid-90s. So I'm glad this filmmaker did that, took that initiative.
It really shows a lot of faith in your own product to yeah. fork over the cash because that couldn't have been cheap to do.
Oh, no, and I'm sure the Weinstein's like, hey, you want it? You got to buy it back from us. So, I mean, that's that's a real show of faith. That's you know, I like what the Weinsteins did in the 90s, but, I mean, lately, no.
Well, to be fair, looking at their company, aren't they like basically a few months away from an All Things Must Go sale?
Yeah, because they lost a ton of money on 9, and then Youth and Revolt got completely jacked in its release. So yeah, I think they're kind of at the bottom because you know that Inglourious Basterds money really helps, but that was like the only bright spot they had last year. So
yeah,
it's like it's weird for me because like on one hand I like them because they did so much for independent cinema. I don't like them because they do have that kind of like iron clenched fist Hollywood brow beating cigar touting movie producer thing going on that like is everything that's wrong with Hollywood.
Mm-hmm.
So
all right, well, let's go ahead and take a quick break and then we'll be back to talk about Someone to Watch Over Me. That should be an interesting discussion. Stay tuned.
In a world where vampires sparkle.
I sparkle!
In a time when Fox execs throw our favorite shows to the lions.
You can't take the sky from me!
The signs of the geek apocalypse are everywhere.
Trekkies in brown coats living together!
But there is a place for your geek salvation. The Jesus Geeks Podcast. A place where you can explore entertainment, culture, and the geek lifestyle. From a Christian point of view, visit www.thejesusgeeks.com now. The salvation of your geek may depend on it.
Oh, and we might just be able to help you with your soul, too.
And we're back talking about Ridley Scott's Someone to Watch Over Me. This was a blatant attempt at commercialism from Ridley Scott, whose last two films, Blade Runner and Legend, were expensive bombs. So this was an attempt to kind of do what was really popular at the time, the cop movie, the cop on the edge movie, and take it in a really different direction. I know, Dave, you weren't crazy about this movie.
If you didn't tell me that Ridley Scott had made this movie, I would never would have known.
Really? Really? Even with the visuals in the beginning? Because to me, this looks like a Ridley Scott movie for the first... Whenever we're in... the Mimi Rogers world.
Dog just hit her head on the table?
She just did.
Okay.
Did we pick that up?
Yeah, we did.
Well, that's a keeper. You okay, girl? Your name is Harley Quinn.
All right.
Okay. Tom Berenger, who was coming right off of Platoon at the time, he was like one of our biggest American actors. He plays this cop. He has a wonderful wife. He's married and has been married for a while. I believe he has a house like in Brooklyn.
Queens.
Yeah. So he's a very, very, you know, blue collar, middle class America, living a pretty happy life. He's got a real hoity-toity New York accent because it's the movies and the New York cops always have those accents.
It couldn't be much thicker of an accent.
Yeah, no kidding. It's a little much. And he's assigned to protect Mimi Rogers. Mimi Rogers' character, and I should say at the time, Mimi Rogers was best known for being married to Tom Cruise. This is before she really established herself as an actress.
She established herself as an actress?
She did.
Okay,
I did a film called The Rapture. Okay. She's amazing in that film, and that's probably what she's best known for. In any case, and also Lost in Space, who could forget? Okay, not so much.
Wow. Okay.
But anyway, she plays this high society woman. She's being stalked by a serial killer, and Tom Berenger is assigned to protect her. And that is the setup for the movie. It's a romantic thriller. It's romantic in the sense that he is tempted, certainly tempted by Mimi Rogers. Meanwhile, Lorraine Bracco, a couple years before Goodfellas, plays his long-suffering wife who's waiting for him at home. So he's torn between this very visually rich and lush world, this glitzy, glamorous, wealthy world that Mimi Rogers lives in, and the world that he knows all too well, the blue-collar world. And that's probably what I like the most about this film, just how there is such a contrast between the two worlds, such a violent contrast, and he's torn between the two. I like the film, but it's not an essential Scott movie.
It wasn't even a serial killer. He killed the guy over, theoretically, from what I could figure out last night, it was a business deal that went bad or something, and he's like, I don't like what you did, so I'm going to stick a knife in your throat. A pen. I'm sorry. It's like a pen in his throat or something. You know,
something. Yeah.
It was just kind of like, this is what you, really? That's all, okay. And there was no motivation except for, you know, it's the one-armed man from The Fugitive.
It is. It's the same actor who played The Fugitive, in The Fugitive, yeah.
Well, he was the one-armed man. Yeah.
Yeah, the one-armed man.
It was very interesting to see the stark differences between the two worlds. But like when the lady walks up to him at the party and asks him about killing a man and what it does to him.
Don't you think cops get asked that all the time, though? Like, what's
do you
it like?
Get
what's
a hard-on like from killing people? Really? They get asked that question a lot?
Well, this is New York in the 80s. The movie is making a comment about the Soho New York art world, which is, you know, very... I mean, this is like post-Andy Warhol. I don't know.
People who need to get beat over the head a lot.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. Privileged people who have no sense of how to be with people. I mean, that's one of the things about the Mimi Rogers character. I mean, she's literally the princess in the castle. They got a lot of, like, archetypes going on. The bad guy trying to storm the castle, and he's the knight from the village. But at the same
time, I'd say he's the village idiot.
Oh, I think he's a little more profound than that. I think the problem is that Berenger's accent is just a little too, it's like he's really trying to make himself seem a little less qualified for this than he is.
Well, his accent is so thick, him calling someone a Goomba. I mean, really, dude? Wow. I just did not.
And you didn't like the music though either. You hated Michael Kamen's music.
The music sounds like something out of 9.5 Weeks. Like it seemed to me like it was trying to be an erotic thriller without any erotic, which made it very boring. Not that I'm saying, you know, that it needed it. It's just the storyline wasn't that strong.
No, it's not. It's not. And it's worth noting that right after this, he did Black Rain, which is another example of a cop movie, but also with kind of a twist. Although that has a real gimmicky twist. Most of the movie takes place in Japan. And I think that's a much better film. Did you see Black Rain?
No.
Black Rain with Michael Douglas. I think it's a much better film. But it's a cop movie. You know, Scott was trying to, you know, kind of go in a different direction. And thankfully, instead of doing cop movies and try to fill in, you know, kind of, you know, be a director for hire for these Hollywood movies, he did Thelma and Louise, which is like, you know, he was the last person in the world to direct Thelma and Louise. And but that's one of the reasons that movie is so good.
But, let's talk about, because if you rent this movie, it's going to spoil what happens between him and Mimi Rogers. The fact that they get together.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, no, it's a... Well, you what mean like on the DVD moron. Box? Or, do you mean the box? Like the DVD box?
Yeah,
away,
yeah.
Or, okay.
Like on the slipcover for my Netflix thing, it's like, when they start having it in romantic, it causes problems with his wife and wackiness ensues. You know,
that's
how it reads.
Cool. That's not cool. They shouldn't do that.
And it's just like, oh, what a moron. It's not like he had a rough home life.
Well, no, he's seduced by the allure, the glamour. It's another world that he's in when he's with her.
It's saying the poor dumb Goomba from Queens didn't know any better, so I just did not buy into it and thought he was an idiot and should have got tossed out on his ear.
I understand the allure for the Rogers character. She is educated. She is elegant. She is beautiful. She is sexy. She's like everything that his other wife isn't. It's not that Lorraine Bracco, and I love Lorraine Bracco's performance. She's great. I think best performance in the movie. This was the role that like got her to audition for Martin Scorsese for Goodfellas. It's not that Lorraine Bracco's character isn't appealing. It's not the case at all. Just that she's such a complete contrast to the Mimi Rogers character. I think the movie works much better as a romantic triangle than it does as a thriller.
Absolutely. You know? But we talked about this on the drive over, was I personally have very little sympathy for a guy who's that stupid, makes that stupid of choices. I can almost never actually sympathize with that character.
That's fair.
I toss him out on his ear, let him go, you know, live with his winner of a buddy who's been divorced and talking about it's the best thing that ever happened to him. Like, dude, you look like an idiot. What are you doing?
Well, he clearly makes the wrong decision, obviously. Absolutely. I mean, you know, the movie makes it very clear that, you know, I mean, it doesn't glamorize the fact that he cheats.
Okay. Can I do like a 30-second spoiler?
Sure.
Okay.
Starting
so if you haven't
out.
Seen the movie, okay, 30 seconds. Okay, so she says, hey, if you're going to come back for me. What does he do? He goes to Mimi Rogers. Really? Really? It's like one last fling before he goes back to his real life? Really? Yeah, zero sympathy for that jackass.
End of spoiler.
Yes, that took less than 30 seconds.
Very nice. All right, so.
Yeah, I'm not a fan.
Okay.
Yeah. But, you know, it's a Scott movie, and it's interesting to see a vast departure from his more well-known works.
Well, for me, like, especially the first 20 minutes of it at that particular party where all the setup of the plot happens, for me, that's where you really see his visuals especially. It's really glossy. It's very beautiful. It looks like a commercial for this kind of world. I like the movie more for, you know, again, it's kind of its social message about this guy being in over his head, blue collar, being in this rich world, than it is about a movie about a, you know, I mean, the ending is so cheeseball.
Oh, my gosh.
The final showdown in the apartment, I mean, it's completely by the books. If you've seen it in every cop serial killer thriller, it's not distinguished that way. But I think as in terms of being a character drama, I like the film.
Enjoy.
Even if the character is completely... You would say reprehensible. I would say understandable. Not to say, not sympathetic, but understandable.
Yeah, I guess.
Where you're just like,
but anyway. He's a moron. And you're like, you know, if you really have to wonder whether his wife's going to take him back or not at the end, you're just like, I know it's going to happen, but it's a stupid thing for her to do.
But she doesn't make it easy on him. I think the Lorraine Bracco character does, I mean, she doesn't let him off the hook, I wouldn't say.
I think she did. Absolutely. When she said, you have to make a choice between, you know, her or me, don't come back for your son, don't come back for whatever, and he goes back to Mimi Rogers, I don't care if it's one more time or not, he's made his choice. That's the way that I looked at it.
But he changes his mind. People change their minds.
They do, but you know...
It's a movie.
Yes, it is. It is. I'm just like, this kind of guy... If she's a cop, would have shot him in the junk and let him go.
That's true. That would have been a different film, though. That would have been like the Lorena Bobbitt story, so...
Yeah. Yeah. But yeah, I did not like it. But that's okay. It's okay. You know, I've seen
you
it once.
Clearly did
I'll
not
never
like
see it.
It
again. Won't talk about it again. I'm good.
There you go. Yeah. But hey, you know, hey, this is a Ridley Scott movie you haven't seen before. That's good. I mean, because let's face it, we've seen most of Scott's movies. Most people have seen his movies. This is one of these films that people forget for good reason, apparently.
I just think it's for good reason personally, yes.
Okay.
But okay, so next week, what do we do next week? We're going to do the Director's Cut of Legend? Is that what we're going to do?
Is that it?
I thought we were
that, or 1492, or Matchstick Man.
Oh yeah,
Man,
we got some. We'll talk about it afterwards.
Okay, we'll figure it out.
We'll make it a surprise for next week.
More Scott next week.
Yes, one more spot. One more bit for it. So do you want to see this movie now, Ethan?
Not really.
Okay.
Yeah, it's no old dogs.
But what is?
What is? Yeah. All right.
So on that happy note, let's go ahead and talk about what's hitting theaters this coming weekend and move on from that. Yeah.
Well, we're still in the crap season because, man alive, unless I'm told otherwise, these movies do not look good. The Bounty Hunter with Jennifer Aniston and Gerard Butler. Boy, does this look terrible.
You mean that doesn't look like cinematic comedic gold?
You know, I try to be nice, Dave, because like I'll never forget the trailer for Mean Girls, which looks so terrible.
Fair enough.
So bad. I mean, the trailer was all about Lindsay Lohan landing face first into a dumpster. That's like, that was all they showed for the trailer. It looked terrible. And that was an April movie, and that's a great film. But, I mean, yeah, really, the Bounty Hunter. And speaking of...
Tina Fey's not writing The Bounty Hunter.
Right, exactly. Thank you. Repo Man, a non-musical version of Repo the Genetic Opera.
I just don't get this.
This is Jude Law and Forest Whitaker, and I think Danny Houston. But yeah, it's Repo the Genetic Opera without the music.
So it's actually been confirmed that that's what this is. This is an adaptation.
I don't know if it's an adaptation.
They're not directly tied.
But it's the same story, the exact same story.
Yeah, but they're not. It's not like based on or anything. Distinction should be made.
I wish Josh was here to hear me say this. Darren Lynn Bousman should sue. He should frickin' sue the makers of Repo Man because it's the same story,
minus Paris Hilton.
Well, he does have that going for it. And then also in release, you know, a book that I love. I love this book. It's a web comic that's been made into a number of best-selling books, all of them hilarious. Diary of a Wimpy Kid. I love these books. I've read every one of them, and the movie looks bad. They should have made an animated film.
So it's just turning into another I Love You, Beth Cooper?
Exactly. Another I Love You, Beth Cooper.
So are you going to take one for the team and watch this?
Or? I'm actually going to go see it tomorrow night, yeah.
Really? Okay.
Yeah, but I'm also seeing Greenberg, so I'm hoping that'll balance things off.
Yeah, I'm bummed because that's like a 10 a.m. screening.
It's like the lucky me, the one day I'm not working. Yeah, yeah. So we'll see.
All right.
So that's really it. Then in limited release, the aforementioned Noah Baumbach's Greenberg with Ben Stiller. The Runaways, which I've heard such mixed things about.
I think that got
delayed to April.
Yeah, it did get delayed.
Oh, it did? Oh,
yes.
Never mind. No. Okay, it's still on Yahoo Movies. It's opening this weekend. All right, so no Runaways with Kristen Stewart and Dakota Fanning. A movie that looks terribly lame and cheesy. Andy Garcia in City Island. It looks like an episode of King of Queens, except not funny.
So it's like King of Queens.
Sorry.
I do too. It's kind of fun.
Yeah, you're right.
But the joke was there. I couldn't.
No, you're right. You're right. It's nothing special. And then Vincere, which premiered. It showed at the Denver Film Festival. This is about Mussolini's son.
Okay.
Yeah, it looked interesting.
Huh.
So that's it. Limited release.
All right. Then what is coming out on DVD next week?
DVD.
And Blu-ray.
Blu-ray. All right. Well, I'll try to specify when it's one or the other or both. I wish I had something nice to say about this movie, but I just can never find it in my heart to say something nice about The Blind Side, which now won an Academy Award for Best Actress. No! Best Actress Sandra Bullock in The Blind Side. Also available on Blu-ray, so you get high-pixelated mediocrity.
I think Barry's the only one who hates this movie.
I haven't seen it yet, so...
I don't like it. I don't hate it. I just don't like it. Crap. And that movie Dave liked a lot, and I will see it based on your recommendation, Brothers, starring Tobey Maguire, Jake Gyllenhaal, and Natalie Portman from director Jim Sheridan.
Yeah, the interesting thing is that the trailers make it out to be like this thriller movie. You know, it's like, is he going to go postal and kill everybody? It's much more of a straight ahead drama. It's just really interesting.
Okay, because I really thought it was going to be like the end of Training Day. So it's actually more thoughtful. Okay, yes. Well, good. I'll go see that. Those are all also Blu-ray. The next couple titles are Blu-ray. Toy Story, the special edition. Very cool.
They're doing a new release of both of them, both Blu-ray and DVD.
Toy Story and 1 and 2, yeah. Yeah. So.
Which there's some deals to be had for this. Do you want me to go through those real quick?
Go ahead.
Okay, so they're going to be $20 a piece release day at Target.
That's really good.
Wait, it gets better. They have a bundle, but wait, there's more. they have a bundle where if you buy them both together, you get $10 off. And then there's going to be a manufacturer's coupon for $5 off each of them. So you get both movies on Blu-ray for $20.
Whoa. So, wait a second. You just broke my brain. So, like, it's bundled, and it would normally be $20 each, but then it's $10 off that, so it's $30.
If you buy them together, you get them for $30.
Wow.
And then there's a manufacturer coupon from Disney. This is why I bought Ponyo for $15 release week, because it had a $10 off coupon. The Blu-ray DVD combo for $15. And so you have the combo at 30, and then there's a manufacturer coupon for each one for $5 off. You can get those coupons at dvdtalk.com in their forums. I'll try to post a link in the show notes.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
Gosh, because that's the one reason I don't own a lot of Disney movies, because those DVDs are so expensive. They're $30.
Well, especially, like, have you seen the Steelbooks at Best Buy?
Mm.
They're gorgeous. They look great, but there's no way I'm paying $36 for a movie.
Yeah.
It's just not going to happen.
Way too much.
So sorry, yeah.
I didn't know that. That's a great deal. That's really cool. Good to know. One of last year's most forgettable movies, despite having one of last year's most impressive casts, The Men Who Stare at Goats. George Clooney, Ewan McGregor, Kevin Spacey, Jeff Bridges, and a goat in The Men Who Stare at Goats.
There you go.
Forgettable film. Too bad. A lot of
Although it sounded really cool.
Yeah, well, you know, great tagline too. No goats, no glory.
Mm-hmm. There you go.
One of last year's best films, and shame on me. It just missed my 10 list, but shame on me. I should have snuck it in there anyway. In fact, Robert Dennerstein, one of my favorite film critics, a colleague of mine, he actually made it a top 11 list, so he could be sure this was on his top 10 list. Wes Anderson's Fantastic Mr. Fox. Yes. This was certainly up there on Ethan's list. This should have been on mine. Lovely film. One of last year's funniest movie, I'd say. Also available on Blu-ray. That's going to be an interesting looking Blu-ray.
Yeah.
And then Mad Men, Season 3.
Such a
Wait,
good
that's
show.
Out?
Well, it's soon. It's coming out next week.
I'm used to them coming out in the summer and watching them then, but
Yeah, and the third season is very interesting. You know, this show is really good, but it's not a show I'm ever going to actually own, because I think watching it once has been enough for me. Okay. For the most part.
Yeah, well, there's shows like them. Let's see. One of the 8 films to die for, Dread. Although I think all of them are coming out from the After Dark Horror
Fest
4.
Yeah, it's like Volume 4. Yeah, there's like 8 movies on there or something.
Okay, so Dread is just one of the many titles. This is not Blu-ray. Let's see. We also got John Woo's Red Cliff in the international version, which is supposed to be much better than the American version that was released very briefly in theaters. It actually has a lot of cut footage, but it's even though it's a longer film, it's supposed to be a much better film. This is supposed to be like one of John Woo's greatest films.
Hmm.
A real epic. Everything that The Last Samurai wasn't. I've heard this is a must-see. I regret that I didn't get the chance to see it. Though when it was playing in Denver, it was showing with the compromise cut.
Mm-hmm.
We also got The New Prisoner with Jim Caviezel and Ian McKellen, which you liked.
Which one again?
The Prisoner.
I haven't watched all of it. It's been pretty. It's
oh, you're still watching.
It's very
okay.
interesting.
Okay. Zombies of Mass Destruction. Yes, the political zombie film.
And we missed that at Denver.
We did miss it. Yeah, it was one of the midnight movies and get the chance to see it. But apparently, it's like Fahrenheit 9/11 with zombies. So you've been warned. Available on Blu-ray, you've got Yojimbo and Sanjaro, the Kurosawa films that are available in a double feature or a single.
Yeah, it's a Criterion, and apparently the reviews I've been reading, they did a remaster. They released the initial versions of both of them a while back, did a remaster a few years ago, and apparently this Blu-ray version is absolutely amazing.
Cool.
Like, it's crystal clear. Like, apparently it's one of the few times when they say it's far and above what the DVD transfer was.
Oh, great. So, yeah. Great, terrific. And then also on Blu-ray, one of my favorites, Terrence Malick's Days of Heaven with Richard Gere and Sam Shepard. Awesome, gorgeous movie. I can only imagine how amazing that'll be. Mind-blowingly good on Blu-ray. And then Humphrey Bogart and Katharine Hepburn in The African Queen.
Finally. I'm so buying the super edition of this.
Yes.
Because we watched it on VHS a while back and have been waiting for years for this to finally hit on DVD. Like, at least 5-6 years we've been waiting for this movie.
Yeah, good stuff. And then finally, a crap title of the week. Boy, was this an easy one. You know, sometimes you have to really dig, but this one just kind of jumped out at me. Free Willy, Escape from Pirate's Cove. So this is Free Willy 4?
Like 4 or 5.
I think 4, straight to DVD. The stars are Bo Bridges, not the Oscar winner, but the brother, Bo. Aw, poor Bo. And then... and then Bindi Irwin, Stephen Irwin's daughter. She's the headliner for this one. Bindi Irwin.
I just don't know how
What an exploitation.
How do you talk about this? I mean, yeah, like you said,
Isn't that weird? That just doesn't feel right to me.
No,
it's not
it doesn't.
It's not that she can't act or, like, take jobs. Look, that's totally cool. It feels...
For a Free Willy movie?
Yeah, for a lousy straight-to-DVD, I don't know. Just feels like...
Yeah.
Something wrong about that. I can't quite word it, but yeah.
Yikes.
Something not quite right.
So yeah, there's your movies for next week.
There you go.
We'll talk about them more. We do have a piece of email this week, and you know, it was really just to us, but I think it's kind of worth bringing up because it's only kind of natural that some of our listeners would want to expand out into multi-region movie watching because not everything you want is going to be available on US DVD.
Yep.
So this is from Jalen Johnson. Hey, Screen Geeks, this is Jalen, and I had one question that hopefully you guys can answer. Since it's pretty clear about that after almost 3 years, the Weinstein Company will not release the real version of Grindhouse anytime soon, I'm forced to buy the Japanese import. Unfortunately, I do not own a player that can play Region 2 DVDs. Do any of you know where to find a DVD player that can play these types of discs? Thank you, and keep up the good work from Jalen.
This is a Dave question.
This is, but I think it's worth... Have you gotten Region Free, Ethan?
No.
Okay. All right, then I guess I'll just answer it. Mostly, the main reason I want to bring this up is it's a far more... It seems a lot scarier and grand of a proposition going region-free than it actually is. Because if you want to spend $300 on an up-converting region-free DVD player, you can. However, and I sent Jalen this model, you can pick up an up-converting HDMI DVD player at Walmart for $50 that's hackable. And suddenly they can play any DVD from anywhere in the world. It'll convert from PAL to NTSC and everything. And yeah, so it's not as big of a financial commitment as you might think. If people want, I can post the link to the player and the hack and all that fun stuff. But one of the other questions was, this is a limited edition of Grindhouse. And where can you buy this from that's legitimate? You know, because buying internationally is a little scary. Generally speaking, I tell people go for sites that are reputable, like hkflix.com or Yes Asia. In this case, since it's out of print, I'd go through like the Amazon Marketplace. I know it's like $150 through there. But Amazon offers you certain assurances that if it's not what you bought, you know, if they send you something that's not what they say it is, you have a lot more protection than you do through, say, eBay or something like that. But generally speaking, if there's a foreign film you want to see, you can usually get it sooner and get it cheaper if you buy it from the country of import. I bought Layer Cake when it was coming out and when it was playing in theaters here. It was like, $12 a ticket to go see a movie up at the Mayan. I imported the 2-disc DVD for $12. So, oh, wow, I own it.
Well, I remember one of the first times you ever had me at your place. You're like, let's watch Kung Fu Hustle. I'm like, oh, you mean you want to go to Denver and see? Like, no, I've got it. And we put it on, and it was an excellent copy.
Yeah, it's a legitimate Korean release. And yeah, it's great to be able to, if you want to watch movies before other people, if it's a foreign film and maybe not have to make the trek to an art house cinema, going region free is a beautiful way to go. I really recommend hitting the forums over at DVDtalk.com. That's where I've picked up a lot of the stuff that I've learned. And that's where I can find a lot of the deals I find on DVDs and Blu-rays, too.
Well, let me ask you this, because like we've talked about this. There's nothing worse than getting it either in the mail or like even from Best Buy and discovering that the disc you got is a swimmer. You know, basically.
Oh, it's a floater, been, yeah.
Yeah, floater. Sorry. It's like all scratched. It looks like Freddy Krueger had its way with it. What happens when you get it from say Hong Kong or something and that's the case?
First of all, it tends not to happen. This is going to sound... Some people might construe this as racist, but screw it. A lot of the movies that you get are floaters are made in Mexico. They have really crappy QA.
Interesting.
I've yet to get a floater from Amazon.co.uk, you know, the UK version of Amazon, from any Hong Kong, Korea-based website. I've yet to get anything like that. Generally, when you do have that problem, they're top-notch as far as customer service.
Okay.
Because it's a very niche market. To be going region free.
Yeah.
And if you screw someone over, the word's going to get around and it's going to hurt your business. A lot more than if Amazon sends you something, you know, first of all, they'll just send you another one.
Yeah.
But people complain about it. Well, that's just part of the manufacturing process. So,
interesting. Yeah. Okay. That's cool.
Like my new Blu-ray player, my LG, I found out it's hackable for region free to go region free for DVDs. So when I replaced the DVD player, I'm like, good, I don't have to buy a DVD player now too.
Nice. Nice.
So yeah, that's really...
That's
quick.
Cool. That's good to know. That's good to know.
That's your movie tech nerd segment of the week.
Yeah, good segment.
Yeah, if you have any questions, go ahead and send us an email, podcast, Ethan, Barry, Dave, or Melissa, all at screengeeks.com. And next week, we're going to keep going. We're going to wrap up the Ridley Scott series with some movie we're not sure about.
We'll figure it out.
Yeah, it's all good. Until then, this is Dave.
This is Barry.
Ethan.
See you.